Welcome to the Athenaeum Review, where we talk about the ideas that shape our world. I'm Ben Lima, and our guest today is John Mraz, who's the world's leading authority on photography in Mexico. He's written 5 books and co-authored 4 others, as well as more than 150 articles and essays, along with directing numerous films and videos, curating more than 12 exhibitions of photography, and his work has been translated into many languages around the world. Among his books are Looking for Mexico, Modern Visual Culture and National Identity, Photographing the Mexican Revolution, Commitments, Testimonies, Icons, and Nacho López, Mexican Photographer. He's the curator of the exhibition Los Hermanos Mayo, Photographing Exile, which is now on view at UT Dallas. Thank you for being with us today.
No, thank you.
I wanted to start by asking about this exhibition. Who are Los Hermanos Mayo and how did they come to photograph this subject?
Okay, well, I don't think they titled it here Photographing Exile, but that would be fine. It's actually Braceros photographed by the Hermanos Mayo. Okay. The Hermanos Mayo is a photojournalist collective of 5 brothers, the brothers of May Day. So it's 3 brothers from one family, which is the Sosa Fernandez family, and 2 brothers from another family, which is the Castillo de Cubillas family. They were Spaniards. They formed this collective before the Spanish Civil War. Then they fought in the Spanish Civil War with cameras and guns as well, some of them with cameras, others with guns, until they were defeated by the fascist forces of Franco. And of course, that was a product of the fact that what you had, the Spanish Civil War was a prelude to World War II, in the sense that it was a battle between democratic republican countries and fascist countries. The difference was that Hitler and Mussolini helped the fascists, whereas the United States, Great Britain, France did not help the republicans. In fact, the passports of those Americans who wanted to fight in France, the Lincoln Brigade, were pulled by the U.S. government. This is when Roosevelt was the government. Imagine what Trump would have done. He'd have shot him. They fought in the Spanish Civil War, and when they had to leave, there were only 3 countries that accepted refugees from the Spanish Civil War. That's Mexico. Chile accepted some, but the big countries were Mexico and the Soviet Union. They were able to come to Mexico. They came to Mexico. They reformed the collective, and they have an archive of 5 million negatives. It's an enormous, enormous archive. It's certainly the biggest photojournalist collective archive in Latin America. I don't know how it would compare it to others, but it must be the biggest in terms of number, you know. So it's really huge. Now, they were leftists. They were Republicans. They believed in democracy. Anybody who believes in democracy in this world is a leftist. They were never communists. They were never part of the Communist Party. But the United States would not accept refugees from the Spanish Civil War. They covered everything, as you can well imagine. But the difference was that the Mayo had their own cameras. They bought their own material. And so they never turned in a single negative to a publication. So that if they were sent to, say, cover the, well, okay, what is the usual situation of a photojournalist? The usual situation is that you go in the morning, they give you a roll of, I'm talking pre-digital, right? They give you a roll of 25 exposures and they say, okay, here's your work orders, 5, you know, president's breakfast, this political meeting, this athletic training. I want 5 photographs in each of these, not one less, not one more, you know, because you have to have a publishable photograph. That means you can't do any experimentation. No, basically, you do what you're sent to do. You go back to the newspaper, you turn in the roll, and that's the end of it for you. You never again see that roll. That roll goes into what is called the morgue. At some point, somebody will come in and say, oh, my God, what are these boxes of negatives doing? Take them out and throw them in the garbage. And so it's dead. In the case of the Hermanos Mayo, that isn't what happened. They brought those images back. And they cataloged those images. Now, the other thing is this, is that you're sent to cover the president's breakfast.
Right.
That's okay. You will take a publishable photo there. But if you see something on your way that's interesting, you're going to shoot it.
Yeah.
You know? And it may well go into what's called, they have a huge, one of the parts of their archive is 500,000 negatives, which is called Imágenes de la Ciudad, images of the city, you know. That's all, you know, they're just shots, individual shots in the city. And so they could take whatever they want. Now, the thing is this, is that they, their perspective, as you can imagine, with a name like the Brothers of May Day, their perspective is a leftist perspective.
Yeah.
And so even though they had to take images of the president and all that stuff, it wasn't that they took critical images of the president. There was no reason to do so until the mid-70s. You couldn't even publish those, you know. So, but they would make critical photographs. They were on the side of the workers in worker strikes. They were on the side of the students in the big 1968 student movement. So they were photographing from a very particular perspective. And, I, and I think that's you know, it's a perspective that is in favor of democracy, basically.
Yeah.
So in my own case, I got into this question of braceros. I moved to Mexico in 1981 when, well, when Ronald Reagan was elected. Yeah. I thought, that's it for me, you know.
Yeah.
I didn't think it would get any worse, frankly. and so I moved to Mexico, and best thing I ever did. In 1982, I found, I was working in a worker studies institute, and I found out about this archive, and I began to work in that archive, which a year later was then bought by the big national archive.
Mm-hmm.
So I had been working, I didn't know what to do with it, really, basically. I'd done sort of a general work on the Hermanos Mayo, a magazine, a journal article, that sort of a stuff, that sort of stuff. And suddenly a guy came to see me, and he said, look, I'm doing a book on the braceros. You know, I want to do a book of photography on braceros. I don't know if you know who the braceros were.
Maybe just tell us a little
yeah,
bit
sure.
about
it. Braceros were Mexican workers that were hired legally between 1942 and 1964 to come to the United States and work. Basically, that program was put into existence because people in the United States were sent to the front to fight, you know, or, you know, they were sent to war. Somebody had to be brought up to work. Mm-hmm. And by and large, braceros either did agricultural labor or rail. They worked on railroad maintenance.
Right.
Those are really the only two things that they worked in. And so that was, you know, it was a program that lasted for a while.
Yeah.
And that was the Baracero program. Well, when he told me that, I said, hey, look, you know, I've got a handle on this now because I've got photographs of immigrants by immigrants.
Right.
I mean, braceros were not technically speaking immigrants.
Right.
You know, they came up, they were temporary workers.
Right.
I imagine a lot of them stayed, you know, but, you know, I don't really know much about braceros. That's my friend Jaime Velez wrote that side of the story. I did the Hermanos Mayo. We published that book in English called Braceros in the Hermanos Mayo Lens, published here in Houston by Arte Público Press. We published it in 2005 in by the Mexican Archive in Spanish. Then in 2015, Teresa Marquez, the head of the Railroad Patrimony in Mexico, who heads up the big railroad museum in Puebla, we're very good friends, and she asked me to do an exhibit on the braceros photographed by the Hermanos Mayo. And I don't charge to be curator of exhibits. I look instead for what kind of a product I can get out of it, because if you don't, an exhibit goes up and a month or two later it's gone.
Yeah.
You know, so if you don't get a book or you don't get something out of it,
right.
In this case I had the book, and what I wanted to do was make a movie.
Right.
Julio Mayo was the last surviving member of the Hermanos Mayo, and he's the one that I've always been closest to. at this point in time, he lives in Atlixco, Puebla, and I also have a house in Atlixco, Puebla. And so we have seen one another a lot. And so I said, well, I want to do an interview with Julio, and I want to cut that into a short for the exhibit. So that's what I did. I did a four and a half hour interview with Julio and made this 20-minute short out of that. And I just went to his 100th birthday, at which he totally lucid, he's completely lucid, in wonderful health, you know. And he stood up with a glass of wine and he said, this is for leftists all over the world, you know. And he drank down the entire glass of wine. Both of his daughters were behind him, you know, afraid that dad was going to fall over, but he didn't. So we remain very close friends, and I was able to make that film.
That's amazing. There were a couple of things that I was looking at a little bit, or reading a little bit, that I was very much struck by. And you mentioned, I think, there's a certain kind of, I don't know if you'd call it iconography, but a certain image of the worker, the kind of low angle worker holding a hammer, a sickle, that's very kind of stylistically important. And then there's also, I believe you mentioned that they the Hermanos Mayo brought Leicas, smaller 35 millimeter cameras, which were new at that time. Anyway, my question would be, could you tell us a little bit about kind of both the way that their political outlook as well as their aesthetic, kind of how that shaped how they treated this subject?
Sure. Well, like I say, they're always coming at this from the perspective of democracy. And in Mexico, we've had a party dictatorship, basically, since the revolution. I mean, the PRI was finally voted out in 2000, but it was voted out by a right-wing party, which is essentially the same thing, the PRIAN. You know, the PAN, the PRIAN, you put them together. And that's largely been done since 1988 through fraud. And Mexican photojournalists have participated in this and participated willingly. It's called the Chains of Gold. They're paid. It's called the Chayote. They're given envelopes, you know, of state money, you know, envelopes full of money, you know, the photographers, the writers, everything, the press is bought. And of course, the press is always owned by wealthy people anyway. So they're going to be acting in their class interests. You know, there are very, very few independent media. Maybe the Guardian in Mexico City, the Guardian in Britain, the La Jornada in Mexico City, Proceso in Mexico City, you know. So that's a problem as a photojournalist. That's a problem. So they were coming from that aspect. The camera is another question. And the small camera is invented as far back as 1924, but it's not really used widely until the Spanish Civil War. You know, and Capa, Gerda Taro, all the photographers of the Spanish Civil War basically used small 35 millimeter cameras, which gives you an enormous advantage. You can use rolls that have many more exposures than do the plates of the Graflex, you know. You can put lenses on, you can use telephoto lenses, you can put filters on, you know. And you can shoot just a hell of a lot more images than are necessary. So it's a tremendous advantage. In the beginning, there was a reaction against that. There was a feeling that you couldn't get a good photo with a 35. You couldn't get a printable photo with a 35 millimeter negative. In part, that was a reaction against them as immigrants. Mexico is not a country of immigrants. So being an immigrant in Mexico is not, you know, can be difficult at times, you know. Mexico is a country of mestizaje. That's the official ideology. We are all mestizos. We are all of a mixed race. So if you're not brown, you're down, or you're up, you know, by being white. The ruling class is largely white, although not all of them, you know, and there's always, you know, shades of color. But, you know, white people are both loved and hated, you know, just like America, I was going to say Americans, we're all Americans here in this hemisphere. Michael Moore says it's the only country that doesn't have a name, you know, so, So I think that was part of the problem, you know. But it quickly became clear that, of course, you can get a good printable image out of the 35 millimeter. The Mayos came in 39 on the first boat full of refugees, the Sinaia. But by and large, it's interesting to me as I've gotten into the archives of Nacho Lopez and Hector Garcia, other very famous Mexican photojournalists, you see it's only around 1950 that they began to adapt to the 35 millimeter camera. They're still using the older Rolleiflex, Graflex cameras. So I think that was very, you know, that was a very important part of it. I think it's also part of the modern aesthetic. You know, the photojournalist aesthetic, the aesthetic of modern photojournalism is using a small camera, being in the middle of action, being on one side or the other often, you know, and movement within the frame, you know. Now, that movement within the frame can be a result of many things. I mean, it can be the fact that the movement is so quick, you know, that's the way it's captured. It can also be that the photographer moves the camera to get movement or shoots at a lower speed to get movement, you know. Yeah. But that's part of the aesthetic of modern photojournalism. And, of course, the aesthetic of modern photojournalism, I'm not talking about postmodern photojournalism. Right. That would be another question with digitalization, is using that camera. And the Mayo, I would say, are certainly the ones who introduced that camera to Mexican photojournalism. Wow. The camera was in Mexico before they came, but photojournalists were not using it.
There was something else I thought was really interesting that I think you wrote, that their position, their creative position, was, I think, a combination of artist and artisan and worker. In other words, they weren't exercising the complete creative freedom of, say, Manuel Alvarez Bravo or a quote-unquote artist, but yet, as you described a minute ago, they weren't simply just taking orders and fulfilling assignments. So could you talk a little about kind of what their creative position was, how they were constrained and how they were free?
Well, they had no constraints at one level because the negatives were theirs.
Right.
So they could shoot whatever they wanted.
Right.
And certainly, there's that early photo of the guy with the sledgehammer on his back, shot from a very low angle. You know, I'm almost sure that Paco, who was the founder of the Hermanos Mayo, but who died tragically in 1949 in a plane that crashed on Popocatépetl, with actually a plane full of very famous people, very funny. But by and large, the interesting thing to me is that, and this I just thought about yesterday or the day before, I worked on them since 82, you know, is that photojournalists make images that are going to be cropped by and large.
Yeah.
Because you don't want to take the time to be composing in the camera. If you try to do that, if you try to be an artist, as Hector Garcia said, you're like the dog with two sandwiches. You know, you can't decide between them, and you know, art, is it art or is it journalism? And by the time you decide, they're both gone, you know. The interesting thing, when I did the book on Nacho Lopez, who's considered to be the most artistic of the Mexican photojournalists, and certainly the second greatest Mexican photographer after Manuel Alvarez Bravo, Nacho Lopez basically directed scenes. Nacho Lopez never covered anything. Huh. It's all feature stories. It's like Gene Smith, although Eugene Smith did cover the war and stuff. But the doctor in, you know, Country Doctor, for instance, the midwife, all Gene Smith directed his photo essays.
Right.
You know, well, Nacho did the same thing. He put a beautiful woman to walk in the street and photographed men reacting to her with the piropo, you know, that sort of a thing. So Nacho, even with Nacho, when I sent the book into the University of Minnesota, I had, you know, I sent them the whole negatives, and then I'd sent digital copies, and then I sent, or photocopies, I guess they were photographic copies, And I sent photocopies where I indicated where they should be cropped. And they wrote back and they said, you can't touch the work of an artist.
Right,
and
right.
I said, Nacho Lopez. And what's more, we don't have the titles.
Yeah, yeah.
I said, Nacho Lopez was a photojournalist. Yeah. I said, all photojournalists are cropped.
Yeah.
You know, all, there's not a single Nacho Lopez photo that has not been cropped, you know. And titles, photojournalists don't put titles on their photos, you know. I mean, who does that is the editorial board, and they don't even put titles, they put descriptions, you know. With the Hermanos Mayo, one of the interesting thing about the Mayo is that their material is conserved in strips.
Mm-hmm.
They never cut up the strips. Nacho Lopez cut up his strips.
Yeah.
So you have no idea what the sequence is, and he threw away the images he didn't like, you know. So you're dealing with an archive with Nacho that has been gleaned, you know. With the Hermanos Mayo, everything is there, no? Sometimes they repeat a shot almost without any exception. The first shot is better.
Yeah.
They just had that eye. They had that reflex to
Amazing.
Get that shot. Not only that, I have never cropped a Mayo photograph except for one of them. Actually, the signature photograph of this exhibit, you know, where I took a horizontal photograph and turned it into a vertical photograph because I really liked the aesthetic structure of it, you know.
Right.
And it had never occurred to me that I had, when I'd published Mayo photographs, I'd never cropped them. And so I sat down and I started going through my book, and I would say, well, where would I crop this?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
What would I crop out of this, you know?
Yeah.
So I think they just had that extraordinary capacity, and they had the material.
Yeah.
You know, they could shoot a lot of images. Now, of course, people have that advantage today. You can shoot a million images.
Right.
The problem is how do you make them accessible? If they're not cataloged, they're inaccessible.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So they cataloged. It's the only photojournalist collective that I know that was cataloged by the photojournalists themselves, and it has 14 branches. One of them is chronological, so that if you take envelope number 24,686, you know, that's the 6th of July, 1958, in the workplace of the railroad workers, Nonoalco, during the 1958 strike. Here's 300 negatives there.
Yeah.
You know, maybe they put in one or two or three or four of those negatives. Maybe they sent photos of them to be published.
Yeah.
But they would overshoot everything, you know, because they didn't know what was going to be sellable later, you know.
Yeah.
And that's always a question, you know, is that you never know. The guy who won the the Pulitzer for photography. That's the Pulitzer, isn't it? Yes, I think it is. I forget now. Of Monica Lewinsky, of a shot of Monica Lewinsky and Clinton together, said that he only found that image because he said, I've seen that face, I've seen that face. And he hired researchers to go through all his negatives, thousands and thousands of negatives, until they found that negative where they're standing close
Amazing.
Together. He said, if it would have been digital, I would have wiped it out because you can't save everything. Well, you can save everything, but only if you have, you know, people to catalog it, you know. And like I say, they worked as a team, you know, so you had people photographing. Sometimes you have two Mayo or three Mayo photographing the same scene.
They had
one of the brothers was cataloging, one of the brothers was taking care of administration, etc., you know, and this would rotate, you know, that sort of stuff. So it really was a collective labor, I think, and that's what was very, very important about them as a collective.
Our guest today is John Mraz. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll talk more about photography in Mexico.